Okay, so for some of you that may have been a new experience, or maybe others of you have done that kind of practice for a while. It is actually radiation practice is, of course, the practice that's named in the Metta Sutta, and we're going to look at that again in a moment. It's also maybe useful to know that it's the only practice that's for the Brahmaviharas that's discussed in the earliest teachings in the suttas. This idea of using phrases and beings and all these different categories and so forth, that's a commentarial teaching that came many centuries later. The idea of using words to practice metta, both are good, but sometimes people find that one works better than the other. And I like the radiation in particular because it's quite visceral and, you know, it's very easy to feel in the body. Or if a person is not so well connected to the body, it can help bring more awareness into the body. So I wanted to take another look, a little bit more careful look at the Metta Sutta, to give kind of a understanding of it that I've appreciated over the years in working with this text, which is to relate the different parts of the Metta Sutta to the three trainings that we do in Buddhism, in Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. So in ethical conduct, meditative development, and wisdom. And the Metta Sutta has all of these elements in it, making it quite a nice training sutta. And so to do that, I'm gonna share my screen. Don't worry, it's not like a PowerPoint lecture or anything, but I just thought it might be interesting to look at this. If you haven't seen this way of classifying them before. So, oops, sorry about that. So this is the same sheet that you have. It just doesn't have the indentations on it. And it's color coded. And so I know you can't see all of it, but there's purple, and then there's blue, and then there's black, and there's some blue and black together. So there isn't just one way to do this, but I find it useful to think about this purple section at the beginning being the Sila section, or the ethical conduct section. So it says this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness. So being skilled in goodness has to do with how we are in the world. And it has little instructions. Let the person be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble, not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. These are instructions of how we could be in the world, unburdened with duties. Now that you might say, well, goodness, I have such a busy life, but I think being unburdened could mean that we don't have very many duties, or it could mean that the duties we do have, we're not burdened by, even if we have a lot. We're able to just manage them. Frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding, and not doing things that the wise would later reprove. These are all ethical instructions for how to be in the world in a way that is not harmful, or a way that's helpful, or a way that's harmonious or easeful for ourselves and others. So it might be interesting in the coming days to consider if there's one of these. You don't need to try to do all of these all the time. That would be burdening yourself with a duty. But we could maybe read through the section on your own and consider if there's a phrase that leaps out at you as one that seems interesting or useful or important. And maybe that's a sign that at this time that might be something to look at. Probably, I would say the emphasis here is on simplicity. and simplicity of being in this sila section. It's a characteristic of this person of goodwill. And then I'm going to move the page down a little bit. And we get to these blue sections, which I'm going to say are the ones that are kind of more about meditation, the samadhi section. So we start with the intention, wishing in gladness and in safety. So we ourselves, we know that we're safe where we are and glad. And from that place internally, we wish others well. And there's this sense of whatever living beings there may be, weak or strong, omitting none, great, mighty, medium, short, small, there's anybody seen and unseen, near and far away, born and to be born. We have this wish for all these beings. So there's an emphasis on inclusivity. Inclusivity is the key in the samadhi section. So we're, in general, cultivating our mind to be very inclusive, to see all beings in this way, kind of the way the sun shines equally on all things on the earth, the pretty things, the ugly things, the large things, the small things. The sun just shines on everything, and our heart can start to have those qualities. And then there's another section below that I've highlighted in blue, radiating kindness over the entire world, upwards to the skies, downwards to the depths, outwards, unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Well, that was the practice that we just did. It doesn't mean that it gets all the way out to infinity. It just means it's not bound, it's not bounded. We haven't imposed any artificial limitation there. So this is a wonderful way to cultivate the citta, the heart, the mind, to have these qualities. And it's not easy necessarily. The mind, sometimes the mind loves it and really gets into it. And sometimes there throws up concerns about that or distractions or hindrances to that process, which is normal because it's a purification process. So don't be discouraged if, you know, in attempting to do this, you run into hostility and ill will and other things that are not what you're trying to cultivate. It's normal that we would run into that which is not metta when we attempt consciously to cultivate metta. It'll all work itself out. Just stick with the radiation. We'll see during this week how some of that goes. And then there are these black sections, which I'm going to say are something having to do with wisdom or panya, something having to do with our understanding and our attitude. So not deceiving others or despising others, not wishing harm. They could equally well go in sila or samadhi. They start to blur together. But we have a sense of using the mind as a protection. So there's some compassion in here also, cherishing all living beings. And then we have something at the end also about understanding. So in all positions, we understand that we can do this standing, walking, seated, or lying down. There's no hindrance to practicing metta all the time. It might look different in different times, but can always be there. Sustaining this recollection so we stay in touch with that. And then we get to the parts that are really about wisdom, not holding to fixed views, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires. This is a wise mind that's not entangled with ideas and opinions. It's not entangled with, as we saw earlier, anger or ill will. And here we see it's not entangled with sense desires and is clear. That's kind of a natural consequence when we're not entangled. We do have clarity of vision. It's just natural. And in that way, we are somehow not subject again to what we have been doing before. Somehow there's a newness to the way we are when we're resting in this state. We're not born again into our habitual patterns, into the world of wanting and not wanting and controlling and all of that. It keeps us so busy. So I don't know that that's, you know, the exact only way to divide up that sutta into different parts, but I would like to suggest that the Metta Sutta offers all of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. And so working with it will be a very well-rounded way to cultivate our mind and heart. In the, I didn't say that in the wisdom section, there's an emphasis on clarity and non-clinging, you know, qualities of wisdom. So we have simplicity, inclusivity, and clarity and non-clinging, all being cultivated through this simple practice of wishing well to whatever we meet, a being. I even suggested yesterday we can meet experiences with this quality. It's quite beautiful. The Buddha recommended it frequently to people as a real foundation for being able to go deeper into the practice. So these are my thoughts for tonight on metta. A little bit thought-oriented, a little analytical, but somehow I think that's related to what I'm trying to get across in this retreat, is that the thinking and the feeling and the emotion and the thought all come together in this citta, and we cultivate it through many different channels. Daily life, sitting, reflection, reading. Okay, so I'd like to open it up then for any comments about the meditation or questions on anything up to this point or anything in your practice, really. Sandy, I saw your hand first.
I had a couple of questions. One was, could you just mention again which section you were identifying as relating to samadhi?
The blue sections that are about, did you want to see the screen again, or can I just describe it? Or
I know which sections there are. Yeah, if you could just mention which sections there are.
Yeah, so it's the one that starts wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease, that first blue section. So the part about inclusivity, where it brings in all the different kinds of beings. And then there was another section below where it says radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and so forth. So that's the radiation practice coming in.
And my other question was just, could you say a little bit about what the Pali word is that's translated as being at ease, and say just a little bit more about kind of what the connotations of that are?
Oh, okay. I don't know offhand in this sutta what the Pali word is there. I would have to look that up, which I will do, and I'll be able to say it tomorrow. But meanwhile, this sense of being at ease, in my mind, that has to do with non-agitation. So ease is a very important quality in Buddhism. And sometimes, you know, the word ease has a sense of relaxation. And we, like when we sit down, maybe we try to relax all the places that are tense. And that's a good way to start in some ways. But ease, I think, is a little bit different, say, than relaxation, because we might have some tension in the body that's, we're really not able to relax at a given moment. There's no guarantee that at any moment we could be completely relaxed, but we could be at ease with the fact that we're not very relaxed at this moment. So ease has a wisdom to it. It's, it has a wisdom quality of being able to be with things. Does that help?
Yes, thanks. So sort of a non-agitation.
Yeah, and so we wish that all beings could experience that in their minds and their hearts, so that even if things are difficult for them, if they're sick or hurt or in a tough situation in their life, which is normal in the human world, we have these problems, but may they find ease with their situation somehow. We wish that for ourselves and we wish that for others, because then we're not going to be causing problems for others through our own dukkha. So yeah, so it's a wish that others find that place in their heart with whatever their situation is too. So Preeti, your hand was next.
So I just wanted to share, and then I have a question. So first of all, I don't have a ton of experience with the radiation practice. I mean, I've kind of come across this, and I wanted to say how much I really enjoyed the guided meditation you did. There's something that there's kind of a simplicity to it, you know, in terms of touching into something that's kind of available and then really radiating and the embodied quality of that. I'm wondering, you know, during this week or even later, is there a place, like if I wanted to practice this on my own time, is there like a particular guided meditation, or like, is this going to be recorded and, you know, is something that we can access during the week if we wanted to do it on our own?
Yes, this was recorded, that meditation we just did. And I believe it can be up, it can be made available to the group as soon as tomorrow. Is that correct, Sandy? Can you help me out on that? Yeah, he's nodding. Okay, great. Yeah, so what happens is after this session, I give Sandy the password to download it, and he gets it and is able to. Can you share that with the group somehow, Sandy? I guess if you, oh, he's putting in the chat where we can get the audio.
Thank you.
So great. Yeah, I encourage, if you want to keep using the recording, you can.
Thank you.
I also, you're welcome. So Michaela, I see your hand, and I saw that Anne very kindly put the Pali for us in the side, in the chat. Sabbe sata bhavantu sukhi tata. So the word there is sukhi, which you may recognize as happiness. Also used in, say, to cultivation of jhana. It's one of the jhana factors. So, but sukhita, by the way, is like the state of being happy. So I'm guessing that's why it's translated as at ease. So it's not just, it's not like the emotion of happy, of being happy, but it's a state. It's like a quality of having a sense of happiness. And so that has been translated, at least in this translation, as ease, being in a state of simple happiness. Okay, Michaela.
So I just wanted to thank you so much. This is a wonderful retreat. Thank you for yesterday and this whole week. I'm very pleased. I feel very lucky to be here. And I did learn this radiation practice with Analio in the APP2 last April. He gave 6 sessions during that retreat for us. So we got the full teaching from him, and
wonderful.
It's available at the Barry website, I think, that you can, you know, download it and find it. I definitely recommend. It's a wonderful process, but you did a beautiful job of bringing it. And I wanted to say that for years I have done metta for my very large, I call it my tribe, my family of children and grandchildren. And I get very personal with it, you know, each individual kind of giving them the phrases when I did the phrases. And I used to worry about that. It was seemed very kind of self-oriented, you know, it was about me and my family and my loved ones and how I could help them and that type of thing. And this radiation practice came just as I was kind of struggling with that, you know, this is a beautiful practice. I want to keep doing it, but how can I make it more kind of neutral? And the other thing I wanted to say is that prior to this year, for years in the symphony, I go to listen to classical music. I have taken music into my body and radiated it out to my loved ones. It's just something that I just started doing. I don't know where it came from. So when I learned this practice from Analia, I was really, really pleased to have that as part of what I could do in my meditation work.
So you already had a skill in radiating. That's nice.
Like the distant healing, I did a lot of that with Reiki, and you know, it's the same kind of sending out.
Okay. Yeah.
It all kind of comes together. So I love that you introduced that tonight, and I look forward to more. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate that you found the radiation practice to be somewhat simpler, or you even used the word more neutral, which is interesting, because then it's, you know, it touches all beings. It is tempting to kind of get very flowery with the ones that we know, because we know specific things about them. But there's a way in which doing that with words and tying into our connection to them can bring in some attachment, which is the near enemy of metta. So we have to be a little bit careful of that. So I'm glad that this practice is working. Thank you. Gary.
Yeah, hi, Jen. Toward the end of the sutta, there's a reference to something that is called sublime abiding. Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard the term calm abiding, I think, in reference to a Tibetan text. So were we not just doing sublime abiding during the sitting?
Yeah, we were.
And is it the extension of calm abiding, or?
Well, it's a little bit different than the calm abiding of Tibetan Buddhism, or even of Theravadan Buddhism, which would be a shamatha kind of practice. But the word that's translated as calm abiding is Brahma Vihara. So it's actually the name of this practice itself is, these are said to be, I sometimes say divine abodes. That's a little bit more literal because, you know, Brahma was the god of the Indian, understood to be the head of the gods in the Indian pantheon. And Vihara just means an abode or a living place. And so the Brahma Viharas are the divine abodes. But sometimes people don't like the word divine. It has different meanings in our culture. So sublime is also possible. It's just meant to be, you know, reified up at the level where the gods are. And we put our heart into this safe place where it can just rest. And that's the sublime abiding. But the calm abiding would be, wouldn't have necessarily this deliberate bringing up of heart quality, right? It would be more of a calm practice like shamatha, samadhi.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing that up. Was there one more? Yeah, Mel.
Yeah, at a fall retreat at IMS once, someone asked in the hall, is it okay to do metta for people that are no longer alive? And whoever was up front said, no, the Buddha is strongly advised against that. I've kind of not done it, but then today I was doing metta and I thought of my grandfather and told me to do it. I did it anyhow a little bit. But do you know where the teaching comes from? And if it's, do you have an opinion about it yourself?
Well, I don't have a strong opinion on that. It is true that classically the teaching is that we would do metta only for beings that are alive. It says born and to be born. So we could do them, I think, for beings that are on the way, if we know about them, like, you know, someone's pregnant, for example. But it's not generally done for those who are not alive. And I know we're a little bit over time, but I'm going to share a story from Shaila Catherine, who has done a lot of Brahmavihara practice. And she's another Vipassana teacher. And she was doing an intensive multi-month only Brahmavihara retreat. So she was really connected in. And she was using as one of her people, her first teacher that she had back in India. And, you know, he was always one of her classic, and she was doing the one with phrases and people and all of that. And so she was using him as well as a few other people and cycling through them. And she had a day where she came to him and it was just completely flat. Like her mind just didn't respond. And she thought, oh, that's weird. And so, you know, she went on and did the others. And then she kept trying to come back to him, but it was always just flat. Like her mind didn't respond. And, you know, that happens in that sometimes we need to refresh our metta people. You can't use the same people for decades and decades. But nonetheless, she was puzzled by this. But, you know, when you're in deep retreat, you don't think a lot about these things. But she was told maybe about a week later that her teacher had died. And on the day that her meditation went flat. And so she says, you know, I don't know, you know, but she was quite deeply into it. And I trust her practice quite a lot. And so in her experience, she could not connect with him once he was dead. So there you go. I offer that with all the caveats that it's just something I heard from her. All right. Well, I think that will be it for this evening. And we'll please do again the Metta Sutta in the morning. And we'll meet again here at this same link tomorrow at 7 p.m. Some of you have practice discussion tomorrow. And if you do, please check again your time, double, triple check your time, and use the link that's in the Yogi Guide, not this link. And I will be meeting with some of you tomorrow. So be well. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kim.